So Jason Padgett lives in Tacoma, and he had a pretty rough episode happened to him several years ago, and he wrote about it in this book called Struck by Genius. I'm talking with him now. This is Gabriel Spitzer. You're listening to Sound Effect on KPLU. And Jason, maybe you could just walk us through what happened that night.
Well, I was at my house in Tacoma, and I got a call from my friend Angela, and she was on a first date with this guy, and they'd had too much to drink, and they were at a little karaoke bar, and they wanted a ride home. So I went there. I wound up singing a song, having a Coke, you know, paid my bill and left. And while we were there, there was two other guys that didn't look normal. They were singing there and just doing their thing like everybody else. And as we left, they were walking out behind us. And I didn't think anything of it at all, of them being behind us. Angela actually saw it coming, but from my perspective, I just heard more than felt this deep thud. And I saw, you know, like you hear boxers talk about when they get knocked out, they see this little flash, like a flashbulb. It was just like that. One of them had run up behind me and he smashed me in the back of the head. And I saw this little puff of light. And the next thing I knew, I was on my knees, just getting kicked and pummeled in the face and the back. And the world was literally spinning. I was completely disoriented. And then having this intense feeling of, I'm going to die right now. And it is a certainty.
Jason did not die, but nor was he okay. He wound up with internal injuries and a severe brain trauma. And that segued into PTSD and obsessive compulsive symptoms. And Jason Padgett says he barely left his house for the next 3 years. Pretty bleak, right? But believe it or not, this is actually the story of a silver lining. And it's a doozy. And that's our theme today, the glimmers of light that emerge from otherwise dark situations. We are going to hear stories of silver linings, including Jason Padgett's, just ahead on Sound Effect. Don't go away. Our first story also has kind of a grim-sounding premise. Rhiannon England lives in Seattle, and she knows her own future. She is going to lose her hearing, and maybe worse. So how do you find a silver lining in that kind of a situation? Well, Rhiannon shared her story with Sound Effect senior producer Arwin Nix.
Rhiannon England has NF2.
That's short for neurofibromatosis type 2.
Neurofibromatosis type 2 causes non-cancerous tumors to grow on her nervous system. She's had them on her spine, on her brain. And Rhiannon has been aware of her diagnosis for as long as she can remember.
My mom, I think, got diagnosed and then they tested me because my eyes started going wonky. And so I've known since the day I was born.
But when she was diagnosed decades ago, doctors were still learning about NF2. There were things they didn't know yet.
They didn't know that it's nearly 100% likely everyone with this disease is going to go deaf. They didn't know that. You know, we were in a small town. We had to drive a couple hours to a neurosurgeon because my mother had it. It's a hereditary disease. And they didn't know how to help her, you know. They didn't really know what was happening. She never had the surgeries she needed that would have helped her. And she died at age 37.
Rhiannon was a senior in high school when her mother died, and she was the one who found her. 20 years later, because of NF2, Rhiannon has lost quite a bit of her hearing.
In my right ear, which is my worst ear, I only hear about 30%. The better ear, which is the left ear, I think it's more like 60. I don't know. I do okay in, you know, quiet environments. It's just, you know, you get me in a restaurant or a bar, forget it.
Yeah.
So
part of her hearing loss came 10 years ago when doctors first found a tumor on her auditory nerve. They were doing everything possible to save Rhiannon's hearing.
So they didn't remove it just to buy me more time. And they did. No one thought I was going to get 10 years, you know? They thought maybe a couple before it grew back, you know?
But it's back now.
It's back.
Rhiannon's hearing is threatened again. If they're aggressive and remove the entire tumor, Rhiannon will lose the rest of her hearing. If they don't, she could lose the ability to smile.
I want it out. They're still trying to save the hearing. You know, they talked about going in and taking out a little bit more again. And how many times can you keep going in there? You know, like, yeah. I already got one nasty scar, you know. I want them to be more aggressive and move as much of it as they can and save the face. I want to smile more than I want to hear.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. When you say save the face, what do you mean?
Well, when you're so in your body, your nervous system, your hearing nerve, your balance nerve, your facial nerve, they're all clumped together. And when a tumor is sitting on one of those nerves, it compromises the other two. So my balance is poor. I already have a little like facial, I'm gonna call it pain. It's just kind of it's a little numb, you know? And I don't know, I just know it's time, because when you have facial paralysis, you can't chew, you can't speak very clear, you can't do a lot of things, you know, you can't kiss somebody even. It's just,
you can't smile.
Yeah, it just doesn't work, you know.
And so you want them to go in and remove this because you want to be able to save what you have of those functions now.
Yeah.
But in doing so, that takes away the hearing.
Yes, it does. And that's a sacrifice I'm willing to take.
But this is a story of a silver lining. If Rhiannon gets the course of treatment she wants, she is weeks or months away from being completely deaf. Knowing that, she decided to make a list, a hearing bucket list. And at the very top of her list is music. Rhiannon was a musician when she was younger, before her hearing started to go. And there's one musician in particular that she feels a really strong connection to. Hey, Brandy there. Carlile. What's that in
your sky? If I had to pick the last thing to hear on earth, that's what I want to hear. I love this chick.
When Brandy Carlile announced her most recent tour, Rhiannon entered a contest to try and see her play at the Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado. She lost that contest. But it didn't stop there. Her friend Kelly took up the mantle. She created a crowdfunding page for Rhiannon. They were going to get her to the concert. They were going to get her to hear all these sounds. They called it Rhiannon's Hearing Bucket List. Money started coming in. Fast. They hit their original goal on day 5 with a little help from an unexpected donor.
Brandy donated 1,000 and crossed us over the finish line, and it was day 5. And it was just so quick. And, you know, I jumped out of bed, oh my God, you know, and that was amazing. That was almost better than the moment itself, you know, like getting to go. That she even knew about this was pretty awesome.
Rhiannon and her girlfriend were able to see Brandy Carlile twice this last year. First in Spokane, and then at the Red Rocks in Colorado. She sent me this recording from that show.
There is nothing worth sharing like the love that let us share our name. Always remember, there is nothing worth sharing like the love that lets us share our name.
Since we first spoke this summer, she has checked quite a few sounds off that bucket list. The crowd at a Sounders game. And crickets.
I can't remember the last time I could hear this. It's good to hear it again.
It's a long and growing list. Rhiannon wants to take her girlfriend with her to hear the ocean. They hope to fly to Nashville for some shows. Maybe they'll go to New York City and hear the sounds of cabs honking and full streets, take in a Broadway musical. But Rhiannon knows what's going to happen.
Are you at all worried about going deaf?
Oh, yeah. It's really hard to be deaf. I can't do this with you when I'm deaf, you know?
Yeah.
I know sign language. I started learning like 10 years ago. I don't think I'm very good at it, but I know enough to, I can still meet people and sign, you know? It's going to be hard. There's no doubt about that. Like my girlfriend, she doesn't sign, but she learns little bits. We'll get there, you know, like yeah. We'll figure it out. And same with all my friends, you know, not all of them sign. Yeah, I'm worried about it. I'm sure I'm going to be sad about it again. You know, once the date actually gets scheduled, I'll go through another circle of depression. But I'm actually really more looking forward to getting it over with because I've spent my whole life dreading it. You know, like this, you know, I'm ready to come out the other end. So.
And does this feel like the other end for you? If you can have this tumor removed and that's not a question anymore, that feels like you're on the other side of something?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hope. And then with this disease, the deafness thing isn't going to be my biggest problem. I can grow tumors with anywhere in the nervous system. So the spine, other areas of the brain. I mean, one day I can end up blind, you know, and in a wheelchair, and a lot of my NFT friends are, you know.
Yeah.
So deafness is nothing compared to everything else, you know.
And you've seen it happen. You saw it with your own mother.
Yeah, I see it every day. Like all my friends, you know, a lot of people die from early age from just all the complications of NFT. And maybe I'm not going to win a lot of votes for this, but I'm actually okay with dying at an early age because I don't want to live like that. That's not living, you know, like not being able to take care of yourself and being stuck in a chair. And, you know, that's kind of why I'm going all out on this campaign. I'm not saving a penny of this. Like all the money is going to go towards more hearing things, you know, and I'll keep adding to the list as suggestions come, you know.
Rhiannon just got another MRI. She has yet to schedule the date for her surgery, but she hopes to have the tumor removed before the end of this year.
Rhiannon England spoke with Sound Effects senior producer Arwin Nix. Rhiannon is still taking suggestions on what she should hear next. You can weigh in on that, get information on how to contact her, as well as more information about NF2 at our website, kplusoundeffect.org. I'm Gabriel Spitzer. It's stories of silver linings today on Sound Effect from KPLU. And we heard a little bit of Jason Padgett's story already. He went to a Tacoma karaoke bar, sang a little Bon Jovi, left with some friends, and then he was brutally attacked and mugged by a couple of other patrons. He thought he was going to die, but then he wound up in the hospital.
They said I had a concussion, a bleeding kidney. They gave me this really strong pain medicine and sent me home. And I remember thinking just how bizarre everything looked on the way home and thinking it was, you know, this pain medicine that was so powerful that was causing it.
Then what happened?
The next day when I woke up, it was obvious it was not the pain medicine that was making everything look so bizarre. Things actually looked, the best way I can think of describe it is like fragmented. Think of like if you're watching television and you know how you can hit pause and then hit pause again and keep hitting pause and you can see frame by frame by frame. It's not smooth. It's just, it's jittery. That's how everything looks, but in real time.
Was that frightening?
It was completely disorientated. I had vertigo. I started getting muscle tremors throughout my whole body, quickly developed OCD and became like this, actually kind of like a little hermit. I didn't leave my house. I had walled myself into this house like it was a kind of like a fort almost. I had blankets over the windows, you know, three layers deep, and one of the front door I actually had sealed shut, and I didn't leave that house for like 3.5 years except for to get something that was absolutely necessary, you know, like food. But at the same time, I was having this literally a mathematical awakening because of this change in vision.
Whoa, okay, hold on a second. Explain what you mean by that. How did that become the way that you understood what was happening to you?
Well, things geometrically suddenly, like, it made, like, things that have patterns pop out at you when you see things like as individual discrete frames instead of this smooth reality. Imagine like you're watching everything move across your field of vision. It has a slightly pixelated look. So what I started doing is mentally like putting a piece of graph paper mentally across my field of view. And I found as long as I made this graph paper, you know, this mental graph paper sufficiently fine, all the motions of everything in these little frames would line up with a vertex point on this graph, as long as the graph was sufficiently fine. And that, it turns out, that is what calculus is, or integral calculus, is when we're slicing things up into these cubes. we're all doing it. It's just our brains smooth it out. And when you can see it, it just makes things much more obvious.
So you're not speaking in metaphorical terms. The vision that you acquired
is literally
different. Helped you, and it literally sort of manifests mathematical concepts, right?
Yes, and there, what's wild is that they're the exact same thing. At first, all I could do, I started drawing it, like there's a way to draw the number pi, but I started drawing what I was seeing and like submitting it to colleges, like here's the number pi, and there's this sneaky way to take an exact angle without this little error that's kind of built into calculus. And then they would send me responses back like, what's your degree in? And I would say, oh, I had pre-algebra. You know, I at the time, I didn't even know you could graph an equation. Finally, I talked to a physicist who said, you know, why don't you come back to school and see if you can learn mathematics in our language? Because everything that you're drawing, it looks very mathematical, but you're using layman terms to describe it, which is just unheard of. And so I went back to school, and it really only took like calculus before I could prove like that pi was pi, and that what I'm doing is literally the exact same thing. It's just looking at it from two different ways.
So, Jason, our show today is all about silver linings.
Right?
Do you consider this a silver lining of this trauma that you experienced?
Yeah, I mean, the good far outweighs the bad. At first, you know, I was very concerned because I have a lot of neurological problems, and I didn't know if it was going to kill me. I went through a lot of testing to find out, you know, what was wrong. And I developed OCD, which took a long time to get over, or not even get over, just get to the point of where I can live with it. But at the same time, you know, I was having like this mathematical, you know, awakening that for me allowed me to see and understand things that I never thought were even possible. One of the other really good things that happened from all this is that by going back to school, not only did I learn traditional, you know, mathematics, but when I went back to school, I met my wife, and we just had a baby girl 13 or 14 months ago now. So if I hadn't been attacked, I wouldn't have met my wife. We wouldn't have my little girl. And then I wrote a book about what happened to me, and it was just optioned as a movie by Sony and Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum set to star as me in the film. So none of that would have happened if it wasn't for this horrible event that at first seemed like it was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And now, you know, looking at it now, the good has far outweighed the bad. If I had to go back in time, I would let those guys beat me all over again just to have my wife and daughter.
You described the way that you see the world now as beautiful, or what you see as beautiful. What do you mean by that?
The patterns that everything make, like when something moves, you can, like a ball being thrown up in the air, the little parabolic arc, only it's a negative. Instead of being x squared, you know, it's like a negative x squared. The double rainbow is absolutely stunning. Or seeing light reflecting off water is absolutely amazing. It builds just beautiful symmetric patterns. Or just a rolling cloud, how it used to look smooth, now it has these tiny little edges that are like almost like a seashell. And you can see how it's a form of a recursive form of like the Pythagorean theorem. It's beautiful to see that the math is literally reality.
So profound change can be a beautiful thing, and it can also be really disruptive and difficult. And obviously there were some very dark days following the assault. I mean, years, really.
Yes.
How much do you experience still the kind of downsides of these new goggles that you see the world through, and how much of it instead makes you happy?
Yeah, there is still more downside than a lot of times what people hear. OCD, it's never going to go away. I'm constantly find myself worrying about things, you know, germs, potential things that could happen beyond what what is I would consider, you know, normal. So that's a constant struggle. I'm trying to maintain some sort of balance to where you can get along. It was like before, I was so dysfunctional with OCD. I was like in my house, you know, drawing like mad. But I was Lysoling my money and then putting it in the microwave for 30 seconds, you know, to make sure there was no germs on it. I mean, just really over the top things to where you can't even function, because not only leaving the house, I didn't want to do it because of being attacked, but, because of the OCD, just leaving the house and being around, you know, a world full of germs at the time became, you know, something that I couldn't even function in. So you can't function once OCD reaches a certain point. And it can be maddening. You find yourself, you know, many times just thinking the same things over and over and constantly fighting whatever impulse it is that you have. But it's all stuff that's going on internally, so people don't see it. But it's a lot of those internal struggles are actually much harder to deal with than, like, the physical struggles. Like, I have an artificial disc in my neck now. You know, I get pain from it. But if I had to compare the two, the OCD is much worse than physical pain.
Yeah. So it seems like you are able to see the warp and the weft of the universe in a way that many of us do not. And that must show you a lot of connections that aren't that obvious to us, or that we might feel but not be able to see. Do you feel those kind of connections among, say, yourself and the cosmos? I mean, does it get that deep?
We're all the same thing, yeah. I mean, and the energy that's in me now has always been around and always will be. Energy's never destroyed, you know, it just changes form. We are all, I think of us all, just by being geometry. Geometry is math. It's literally the same thing. I mean, so we are mathematics, you know, just with some limitations put on it, you know, from physics.
Jason Paget lives in Federal Way. His memoir, written with Maureen Seberg, is called Struck by Genius: How a Brain Injury Made Me a Mathematical Marvel. You can see pictures of some of Jason's drawings that demonstrate a little bit of his new abilities and how he sees the world at our website, kplusoundeffect.org. Sound Effect from KPLU. Gabriel Spitzer here, and we're talking about silver linings today. So more now from the Department of Bleak Outlooks. Global warming is full of scary sounding prospects. More extreme weather events, rising seas, flooding. You've heard all this gloom, right? But according to one local expert, you pick the right place to live. Cliff Mass, UW atmospheric scientist, blogger, KPLU commentator, smoldering baritone. He says the Pacific Northwest could well be a climate change refuge.
So I can go through one item after the other of major changes that are going to happen under global warming, and most of them will not produce serious effects here in the Northwest, mainly because of our proximity to the ocean.
Mass says, yes, global warming will likely bring some new problems here, but the cool eastern Pacific should keep the region from warming up too much. And that might open us up to some of the less frightening consequences of climate change, like fewer injuries from black ice or a longer growing season for wine grapes. And in a lot of places, just nicer weather.
Not all the changes are going to be negative. I think that's a real problem with the media. They only paint global warming as gloom and doom. Everything is bad, a complete disaster. And it's not that way. Some things will get better. Some things will get worse. There's the opportunities for us to adapt because, you know, places like the Northwest, we have the ability to make adaptions.
But the silver lining of climate change in the Northwest does not sit well with one group of people who live and work here, other climate scientists, at least most of them. So KPLU environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe went to speak with one of them, Laura Whiteley Binder, with the Climate Impacts Group at the University of Washington. She says, sure, there are some positives, but she wants people to keep that in perspective, especially if a summer like the record hot one we just had becomes the new norm.
The non-climate person in me that is sitting there looking at the forecast when it says it's going to be 70 degrees in, you know, April and thinking, excellent, this is great, I'm going to really enjoy this week. And the other part of me saying, this kind of thing is, while this year is due to natural variability, we can't say that this year is in any way connected to climate change, just knowing that there will be a point when climate change is really driving a lot of that. And I think the thing that is the concern is, where does it stop?
It sounds like you're talking about almost inconceivable changes.
Well, I've often joked that one should never go out to happy hour with climate scientists because it is not happy. It's not a happy hour in the sense that there are projections out there that are really calling into question the ability to, you know, sustain agriculture, and they're pretty cataclysmic. But I wouldn't want to leave people with that impression, because once you start getting into that level of change, it just immediately depresses people and they shut down.
Yeah. So you have two daughters. Mm-hmm. They're going to live into some of these projected times, I assume. So yeah, what do the conversations look like between you and your daughters when you talk about climate change?
They know I work on climate change issues. They know I work on impacts and adaptation. But it's funny, we haven't had this sit down conversation. It's kind of like the talk, you know, like do you have this sit down conversation with your kids and say, let me tell you about the ways that, you know, your future may be awful. You know, that's not really the conversation I'm looking to have with them. Instead, it ends up being these little snippets of conversations here and there. So there'll be something in the paper about sea level rise. There'll be something in the paper about a heat wave. And we'll have these, you know, these 90-second conversations around that topic. But I'm not looking to have this big sit-down, heavy conversation with them. Just it's an opportunity to talk about the fact that we need to drive less, bike more, all the things that we all need to be doing as individuals and as a society, supporting clean energy, doing what we can do to reduce our carbon footprint. I've heard, you know, and I think there was even something in the New York Times at one point about the level of anxiety that a lot of teenagers are getting around this issue of climate change. There's some really deep concern that their future is in jeopardy. And so I don't want my daughters to feel that at age 10, you know, and I just, you know, they're 6 and 10. So, you know, there's also this age factor too that goes in that decision about how much to talk about it. But it is the kind of thing, a kind of conversation that you have to approach carefully, because you don't want to just essentially lead them to think that there's really no future.
What about that blog post from Cliff Mass depicting the Northwest as a potential refuge from the effects of climate change?
I have a friend who lives in Phoenix. She's lived there since 1989, and she complains about Phoenix getting too hot. But when she talks about moving, she talks about moving to Flagstaff. I don't know anybody who has gone from beyond complaining about the weather. Everybody complains about the weather where they live to some degree, but I don't know of anybody who has said, I really need to leave. It's interesting that, you know, we had a massive superstorm Sandy, I have a hard time with that sometimes, that hit the East Coast, and yet you didn't see this large depopulation of the East Coast. People love the places that they live.
Are there silver linings in your view to this?
I do think that there are some silver linings in the fact that we as a society are in a rare position, in a unique position of having an incredible amount of knowledge about how climate may change and how it may affect systems. I mean, there has been no time in history where we've had the ability to model and project these kinds of impacts the way that we can now. So the ability to see what the future might look like if we don't reduce greenhouse gas emissions, or we don't develop adaptive strategies for dealing with the impacts of climate change, I mean, the ability to have that foresight or to have that knowledge gives us a tremendous tool to change direction.
That story from KPLU's Bellamy Palethorpe. You're listening to Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer. Our theme this week is silver linings. And I'm sitting in the Burien branch of the King County Public Library system with our friend Amber Slavin, who's the supervising librarian here and Sound Effects resident librarian. Hey, Slavin.
Hey, Gabe. How are you?
I am not bad at all. So here we are talking about three books by authors with local ties that have to do with silver linings. Often the books that we've talked about have had certain recurring themes, kind of dark, little sad here and there. So what was it like to seek out the silver linings in a handful of stories for us?
Well, I feel like that's just a thing I do anyway. These books probably still are kind of dark.
So let's get right into it. What's the first book you got?
It's Wondering Who You Are, which is a memoir by Sonia Lee. She is local. Part of the book takes place in the Pacific Northwest and Seattle specifically, and she teaches at the Hugo House.
So what's the spine of this story, this memoir?
It's about Sonia and her husband Richard, their marriage, which at the time of this book, they'd been married for 23 years, mostly happily, although there was a lot of just trying to figure each other out and drinking problems and anger problems and that sort of thing. But they love each other a lot. And in the 23rd year of their marriage, Richard is diagnosed with a rare cancer, and they sort of explore a treatment that's pretty radical and scary.
It is scary. Can you describe it?
Yes. They, for the surgery, literally open Richard up, take out his guts, dump in hot chemotherapy liquid, and then put him back together. So it's incredibly intense. He requires a blood transfusion after the surgery, which he doesn't get as fast as he should. And it turns out that that creates a brain injury that causes Richard to forget mostly everything that happened in his life before the surgery.
Wow. Including like his relationship with his family, his wife and his young son?
Yes. They have a daughter as well. But he wakes up and pretty much doesn't remember anything, but immediately knows that he loves the woman that is there taking care of him, Sonia. So that's kind of a sweet part of the book, too. Part of the result of the brain injury, too, is that his personality changes quite a bit. And this angry, well, he wasn't angry, but he expressed some anger in their marriage early on. But this passionate, fiery, adventurous man is very sweet and gentle and quiet and not super expressive.
Wow. So there's a silver lining in the sense that he comes out on the other end of this treatment and that he survives the cancer. But then the whole journey that ensues sounds pretty harrowing. I mean, trying to put your family back together with this kind of stranger almost and rediscovering some things that aren't so happy. I mean, are there silver linings on that part of the journey too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the author is pretty resentful throughout a lot of the book because she suddenly has lost this man that she's crazy about, she was crazy about, and still, you know, is grieving the loss of him while he's living and still there. But it also kind of forces her to go on a journey to figure out who she is, not defined by her relationship with her husband.
Well, the book is called Wondering Who You Are, a memoir by Sonia Lee. And now on from a memoir to a book of poetry. What's the next book you got?
It's The Three Einsteins by Sarah Galvin. Sarah Galvin is a local poet and writer. They write for The Stranger and I think maybe some other publications and have another book coming out sometime soon.
What's the feel of these poems?
These poems, to me, are very optimistic. They're really excitable. They're pervy. And they're also, I just feel like the tone is sort of a stoner vibe. And I mean that with all due respect. It's just sort of a wondering, like, what if this, and if I were to do this sort of thing that kind of feels like a hazy dream if you just read them all the way through.
So fanciful, but in a kind of anesthetized way.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Exactly.
Is there one of these poems that stands out to you as being emblematic of the silver linings idea?
In Jump on the Stage with a Blast from the Orchestra, Galvin literally says that they know better than to use words like silver and lining. But I disagree. I feel like there's a lot of kind of looking for beauty and optimism and exuberance in these poems. Yeah. It particularly resonated with me because I feel like I am a pretty optimistic person and do a nice job of seeing the good in things and kind of trying to figure out where people are coming from or why a certain thing is happening in a particular way. But my affect is pretty just chill. So I just appreciated sort of hearing an author speak in that voice.
So with that, why don't we go on to our number three? What's the last book that you've got? One by an author that most people will probably know.
Yeah, this is The Absolutely True Diaries of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, which is one of my absolute favorite books of all time. It makes me cry every time I read it. It was his first young adult novel, sort of in relation to it being banned books week. It's kind of funny because this book has been challenged dozens, if not hundreds of times, and is always on the banned books list.
Why does it get banned here and there?
If I remember correctly, I think people challenge it for being anti-Christian, which I imagine is because the main character, Junior, questions everything, including God. And then there's a decent amount of masturbation in it. He's a teenage boy. So I think that's a huge thing that people challenge too.
So what happens to him? What is the story about?
Junior is a sort of nerdy, bookworm, funny-looking, really smart kid living on a reservation. It's his coming-of-age story where he's starting to understand sort of the oppressive structure of the reservation, and he knows that if he wants to get the sort of education that he really is compelled to have and desires, he'll likely have to leave the reservation, which is painful because it's hurtful to his family and friends. They want him to have those opportunities, but it also there's resentment for him leaving.
What about his story do you identify with?
I am from a very small town in southern Ohio, and I definitely identify with Junior's desire to want to go and get a better education, go be around more opportunity, and how that sort of also opens up his eyes to oppression and how people from certain areas are treated, or, you know, how it's so unbelievably unfair that the opportunities available to people geographically or because of race or class or whatever are so different from other opportunities.
Well, that book is The Absolutely True Diaries of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. Amber Slavin is our resident librarian and supervising librarian here at the Burien branch of the King County Public Library System. Thank you for being on our show again, Slavin.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for coming to my favorite library of all time.
And happy Banned Books Week.
Yeah, happy Banned Books Week.
How are you going to celebrate this year?
Oh, well, I already celebrated. The Seattle Public Library had a big event at the Neighbors Nightclub on Saturday. They have this huge event called Banned Books in Drag. And I'm a DJ also, so I got to, my name is DJ Dewey Decimal. So naturally, they asked me to sort of DJ the event while people are sort of filing in before the drag show. And I also get to play all the tracks for the drag queens as they come out and perform their interpretations of various banned books.
Can you give us, as a professional banned book drag show DJ, a recommendation for what song to use to take us out of this segment?
My favorite performance from the night was, believe it or not, Where's Waldo has been challenged. And one of the performers, she came out dressed like Waldo and had kind of a crew of people, but she performed to Rihanna's Where Have You Been? So it was like this big club track with a drag queen dressed as Where's Waldo. It was really well done and hilarious.
Sound Effect comes to you from senior producer Arwen Nix and producer Kevin Kniestad. KPLU's Bellamy Palethorpe contributed this week. Our interns are Warren Langford and Casey Hicks. Web help from Dave Nagaris. Aaron Hennessy is our executive producer. Special thanks this week to Lowell Kiesau and Nick Francis. Sound Effects on iTunes for free. Yeah, you can get our podcast there and rate the show or write us a review. And we really do want to hear your feedback. Email soundeffect@kplu.org. and tweet at KPLU or at Gabriel Spitzer. And you've got a new option for that this week. Sound Effect finally has its own Facebook page. You can go there and search for KPLU Sound Effect. Give us a like. Kevin's going to take the reins next week when our theme is confessions.
People say he thinks he's God. I'm not God. The ship is God. The sea is God. God is God. I'm only the prophet. I interpret God.
I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this is 88.5 KPLU.